Like, it's funny that, like, I almost, barbecue kind of, it reminds me of, like, sports teams. Like, everybody is so passionate and protective of their region's barbecue. But multiple regions can be good. Like, just can be, like, multiple teams can be good, but you're insistent that, no, mine is the best. And yours is somewhere below that.
Hello, and welcome to Food Crush, the On Milwaukee podcast for people who eat. As always, I am your co-host, Matt Miller, culture editor at onmilwaukee.com, and I am joined, as always, by Lori Frederick, dining editor at onmilwaukee.com. How are you doing today, Lori?
I'm doing good. I got a little, yeah.
I think I'm doing better. I am broadcasting live, which is to say, when you're listening to this, not live at all. I am broadcasting from beautiful Hilton Head, South Carolina right now. And we drove through Asheville.
Asheville.
And had some delicious barbecue and some delicious barbecue sauce. And obviously in South Carolina, more delicious barbecue. And Lori, how convenient, we're here talking with some barbecue. We're here talking about barbecue today. If only I did this for every podcast where I just went where the thematics of it were, where it was like, interviewing an Italian restaurant.
You're not quite in the right place, but your theme is better than mine.
I'm in barbecue country. I'm not in the part of the country that our barbecue we are discussing today comes from. And we'll talk about these nuances and all of that, all those finger-licking nuances. But first, we have to introduce our wonderful, delicious guests. They themselves are not delicious. They make, that's great. You always like to make things super awkward at the start of a podcast. You always love to make things super uncomfortable. Lori, please introduce them before
well,
I make
we don't know.
I'm, an I'm even not bigger gonna, fool yeah. of myself.
We're not here to find out whether our guests are delicious or not. But, you know,
that's a very different podcast.
The reputation of their food comes before them. So.
That's a more October-themed podcast, our cannibalism podcast.
Yeah, that's over. That's over. your kick.
It's funny because they were talking about how they were nervous and anxious coming onto this podcast, and here I am rambling for minutes on end about calling them delicious. I think any pretenses on this podcast have been ruined.
It's all been destroyed. No seriousness here at all. But we are here with Adam and Cindy Belke, and they are the co-owners of Sweet Smoke Barbecue, which
potentially
is a
delicious.
Brand new.
We don't know.
Brand new barbecue pop-up. I did have the absolute privilege of trying their smoked brisket burger, which was phenomenal. I will let you go back. I'll link that in, and I'll let you go back and read about that. But if that is any indication, there's a lot more amazing stuff where that comes from. And we're going to talk to them about all of that, including how they got on the barbecue train, and all that. So, hi guys,
much for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Thank you for enduring that incredible intro.
Did you happen to go to Buxton Hall when you were in Asheville?
We did not, unfortunately. It was just a quick stop in Asheville. Unfortunately, we went there. We went to a brewery. We were mainly there for a brewery, which I believe was called. Blushing something. But it was really great. A beautiful venue. If you're in, I will look it up so I can tell people where it is specifically. But for those who are there in Asheville, what is the name of the barbecue place you were going to recommend?
Buxton Hall. So we went, 2019, I think, and I dragged Cindy because I mostly wanted to go to that place. I have a few places that I want to kind of check off a list across the country. I also did some breweries when we were there. I think Wicked Weed.
It's Burning Blush, by the way. That was the name of the brewery I visited in Mills River. So outside of, I believe a little outside of Asheville, but Asheville adjacent.
Yeah, they've got a number of great breweries in Asheville.
Asheville is just amazing insofar as both food and beverage is concerned. I mean,
highly recommend. I had a very nice kind of dark Czech lager while I was at there. I want to hear, but I know we'll dig more into this, but before I forget, I need to hear, what are some of these kind of must visit places on your to-do list around the country, your kind of barbecue bucket list?
Let's see. The ones that I haven't gotten to yet, like, not a surprise, but a lot of them are still in Texas. like Texas, like the per capita of great barbecue and the barbecue that
like
we
Walgreens
try to emulate.
There, yeah.
But well, and not to destroy the premise of all of this, but you did get to Franklin Barbecue, which
correct, yes.
As far as the universe is concerned, like you can be at peace, you know.
Yes,
you made I for think sure. it was Texas barbecue having for been sure. to Franklin. So
you know, I was supposed to go to Franklin Barbecue. We did a baseball trip, my dad and I, and we went to San Antonio, and we were going to make the drive out to Franklin, and unfortunately, I got too drunk the night before, and was too much of a mess the next day, and I never got to Franklin Barbecue. So, was
yeah,
it
it's a commitment?
Advertised?
It is. It's a commitment. Like you said, you need to be able to get up and get there. At like I don't know what it is these days, honestly, but when I went, it's like, you know, 8, 9 in the morning if you want to eat within the first hour or so after they open. Otherwise, you're going to be waiting for a very long time even after they open the doors. Mm-hmm. But speaking of San Antonio, that's got one that's on sort of my bucket list. 2M Smokehouse. Another one that's really, really good, supposedly. But everything I've heard and read. One that we went to, I dragged Cindy to again.
He wasn't dragging me for the record. I'm happy and willing to go, but he's the driving force, I would say.
Yeah. I have a hard time believing that you're like, oh no, I've got to eat delicious barbecue. Yeah,
terrible.
I'm excited to go. And I'm like,
yeah. But he's the one who got you into this barbecue smoked meats obsession track.
Certainly.
Right. So
oh,
yeah.
Yes.
So he's
yes.
leading the way to yes. visit all of these places. Yeah,
that was kind of the start. Franklin was when I was there, down there with friends, mm-hmm. and I had another friend actually from California who had been there before, and convinced me it was worth to show up to this barbecue restaurant at, you know, like 7:38 in the morning. And wait around until they opened at 11. And
this unfancy barbecue place that,
yes.
like, yeah.
Yes. And I'd heard rumblings. I think that was right around the time, you know, it's like 2012-ish, 2013, where Franklin was kind of getting like national notoriety. I think mm-hmm. President Obama might have even eaten there already at that point. And like, it was popping up here and there in popular culture. But he said, no, it's incredible to me. Spending 3 hours, you know, when you're in Austin, Texas for the first time, standing in a line still seemed like a stretch, but he was pretty convincing. And honestly, the just sitting in the line and drinking beers and talking to people from all over the country was like probably some of the most fun that we had the entire time we were there.
I feel like that's part of the experience itself, right?
For sure.
Just
absolutely.
Kind of like I mean, if you're antisocial and you really don't want to chat with people, I think it doesn't work out quite that way. But I think just standing there and being a part of, you know, that group of people who knows
yeah.
you to be
it kind of does, because I can tell you I am a bit antisocial and don't always want to talk to people myself, and I still enjoyed it a lot. You know, yeah. like it's people, you're all kind of there for a common goal. You're excited about getting in the doors and trying this thing that you may have had before and you love, or you may have never had before and people have convinced you that it's great. There's also something to be said about the fact that you're sitting there for 3 hours and you can just smell it cooking the entire time you're sitting there. So it's
good
like you're going to be
if you weren't hungry
yeah.
before, you're definitely right. hungry by the time you, yeah.
It's going to be great no matter what. Because you're starving when the door opens. But no, I had it. And then I was like, well, I was like just blown away by what I had eaten, and you know, specifically as it pertains to brisket. And I actually like saved some and wrapped it up and brought it back home for Cindy to try, just because I'm like, you can't fathom what this tastes like.
And it was delicious.
So was that like the
say,
birth
it,
of
made,
your...
it made the trip. It made the trip I, home. Okay.
Yeah, it made the trip. He didn't really follow food safety protocol in bringing it in back to me. But he's like, it's smoked. Just, you know, and I'm like, okay. Yeah. It was
packed tightly.
It was so good. I was like, if it tastes this good after riding on an airplane for, you know, 6 hours of being in your suitcase overnight or wherever it was, I have no idea. I can't imagine what it must have tasted like fresh. It's really great. I wouldn't recommend that, by the way. Just
not
yeah.
So is it was this stuck like between clean clothes?
Yeah. So was this like the start of, was this kind of the seed for Sweet Smoke, or did it kind of go from there? Like, was there kind of already the foundation of like, I really love barbecue, this is something I have a passion for, or was this kind of the moment where it was like, oh no, like, I want to be a part of this. I want to make
something
this.
Was triggered inside of me, and now I need to
without
pursue.
Question. But it was almost more of just a selfish, like a personal need, like not even like I wanted to do this for a living or a career, or I thought like there was even a business opportunity. It was just like, well, nothing like this exists where I am, but I love this. I'm not going to move to Texas. Like, how can I access this? So like, there's got to be a way to figure out how to do it myself.
And how can I recreate this at home so I don't have to go to Texas every time?
Yeah. So then it just became, I wanted to try to cook that brisket in my driveway without really any real intentions of one day, like trying to open a barbecue restaurant. And then that's sort of kind of just gradually developed over time as I found out how much I enjoyed the process, how much it just fit with my, I don't know, personality. I've always been a bit of a night owl as it is, and a little bit OCD when it comes to like, details, task-oriented details, which is a lot of what goes into barbecue when you're cooking for like 12, 14 hours at a time. So I just really enjoyed the process. And kind of like what you were saying, Lori, I also like right away you get a sense, it's just different when you go somewhere where barbecue is so ingrained in the culture. And it's so communal and community-based that it really does bring people together, and you're flopping down a tray of food, you know, in a table of 4, 5, 6 people. And you just have a bunch of things and you're all picking at it. And it's almost like a built-in like icebreaker of sorts that you have this tray of food and you're deciding what you want to order together and you're all eating from the same thing. And I just thought it's just all around, even setting aside how amazing the food is, it's just a really cool concept that we don't really have much of around here. Certainly didn't at the time.
Yeah.
It is barbecue is like an event. It's like a food tied to a social event in a lot of cases. And it is a kind of a social gathering in its ways, especially like, it's kind of strange that Wisconsin, which has so many food based social events like Booyah up north and, you know, tailgating throughout the state, that we kind of never have really embraced the barbecue as much as we, you know, do the traditional barbecue, as opposed to, you know, just grilling brats.
For sure. Like yeah. I mean, it seems like it should weave so seamlessly into, like you said, like Wisconsin culture. And I think it will in time. It's just, it fits very well with what a lot of people enjoy around here. Lots of smoked and grilled meats.
I feel like a lot of it has to do with where steer and things were raised. You know, I mean, you have Texas, and that's like, you know, plains and plains of, you know, of folks and ranches and cattle ranches and, you know, trying to figure out what to do, you know, with all the meat.
For sure.
It doesn't take you very long to be like, okay, let's, you know, smoking things, you know, grilling things. I mean,
for sure.
You figure out all of that to do, you know, and it's not like we don't have it here, but we don't have it in the, you know, I guess in the mass.
Yeah. It was born out of necessity in Texas because, like you said, they have steer ranches for miles, literally. And all these cuts of meat that were undesirable once upon a time. And people down there figured out, I mean, long before even people in Texas necessarily were cooking barbecue, had figured out, oh, if you just cook this for a very long time at a very low temperature, it becomes actually really delicious. And so it's just a really good way to utilize all these cuts of meat that might not have been like in the front of the case at the butcher store, you know, or whatever. Yeah, it's never been anything that we've needed up here in order to work through all of the cattle that we have roaming around. But it's definitely becoming more and more popular across the country as people kind of get familiar with Texas barbecue.
So when was the moment for you when you realized you could make the leap, that your food was good enough to make the leap from, I'm just making this for my satisfaction, to, this is a sellable product I could give to people?
Well, and in between there, I'm also interested in, like, what did you do? Like, I'm envisioning there were lots of books and YouTube videos and, like,
Yes.
And flops.
Lots of internet stalking for yeah. tips.
I will say I've smoked one brisket in my life and I was like, I'll have to go back to this when I have more time because it did not.
Yeah, that's how it goes. Yeah. Cindy can attest to this. So I'm going to let her talk about all the briskets that she's been flopped in her lap almost literally. And I'm like, well, sorry, but what can we do with this?
Yeah, I'm not one to waste. I do not like to waste food. So even if Adam made a brisket that was I was always very encouraging because I knew it was a process. But sometimes, especially during the pandemic, he would make a brisket, and then I was trying to figure out who to give it to and how to use it. What can I put it in for dinner tonight so our children will eat it too? And then 2 weeks later, he'd be there with another one. I'm like, another one? Like, I just used up the last one. it was definitely a process and learning curves, trial and error on his part. And a lot of YouTube videos, you did your own education.
Yeah. So to answer the question, I guess, directly, I'm trying to think. I don't know if I remember a time where I was like, oh, okay, yes, I've got this. Cause I'll full disclosure, it's so frustrating. I'll still cook a brisket one weekend or a group of briskets for the restaurant where I'm like, oh, these are the best briskets I've ever cooked. And then the next week, I'm like, these just aren't quite as good as last week's. And it's so frustrating, but that's just the nature of, live fire cooking. And you're always striving to cook the best brisket you've ever cooked, but it doesn't always work out that way necessarily, even if you feel like you're as locked in as you could possibly be.
Well, there's so many variables.
Yeah. And I feel like that's what people in the barbecue realm, everybody's chasing that perfect brisket. And you get close where you get to it almost, and you just keep going because you've been close.
Yes. Right?
And it's almost like pursuing something that almost doesn't exist.
Absolutely.
Out there.
Yep. Absolutely. Because the reality that you could actually cook a brisket as good or better than you've cooked it every single time you saw it cook them is literally, it's impossible. It's just not going to happen. Like you said, Cindy, you're saying all the variables that go into it if you're in all likelihood, you're cooking outside on an offset smoker, especially in Wisconsin where we have four seasons. It's not like it is in the South and you're dealing with sub-zero temperatures sometimes and sideways rain as we had this weekend and whatever else. Yeah. It factors into your cook and you have to be prepared to adapt to whatever Mother Nature is tossing in your lap in that moment. But I'd say probably more than anything, I just always felt... I worked in finance and accounting for the 15 years prior to opening the restaurant here earlier this year. And I was always decent at it. And it was always just a thing where that's what my college degree is in. There's always work. It always felt safe, but I always kind of felt like it was, for me, a square peg in a round hole situation. I didn't feel like it was what I wanted to do or what I should be doing or what I was best at. And then when this came along and the more work that I put into it, it just kind of seemed like it was a natural fit for all aspects of my personality, the experience that I had gained, working in finance and accounting that kind of prepares you for some of the aspects of restaurant ownership that maybe restaurant owners aren't always accustomed to if they're more cooks or, chef oriented. So I kind of had been given the reins to a business and all of the financials of a business in my last job prior to this. And it really helped me out a lot getting ready for running a restaurant because we were a business that operated in 30 cities across the United States. Mm-hmm. And some days and weeks, especially through COVID, we worked in the travel industry, essentially. So it was a very rocky time. And I thought, God, if I can do this, running one restaurant, theoretically, should be nothing.
Right. Well, it at least puts you ahead of some other folks, where you can be as great as you want at the cooking piece, you know, or even the hospitality piece and the costing and the business end, you know, and even the marketing end is often what trips people up, you know, because you...
Absolutely.
All of those numbers have to work. You know, you have to get people to a space, you know.
Yes. You have to get them there. You have to find the cheapest but best products. You know, there's a calculus that goes into everything. Where you want to put out the best product.
Because everything is a trade-off as far as buying food, you know. And if you decide you really want, you know, if you decide you absolutely have to buy the best and most expensive of something, like something's got to give.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. Yeah. And that's just, not to wax philosophical or get all romantic about barbecue,
Wax philosophical.
when you go to cook a brisket and you trim it to get it to the shape that you like, you're left with 4 or 5 pounds of beautiful prime grade brisket that you certainly don't just want to throw in the trash. So we take that and we make it into our burgers or our sausages. And it's just, to me, it's so fun to take something that might be considered scrap and make something else delicious with it and be resourceful. It's just another aspect of it that I really enjoy.
Yeah.
So I'd love to ask, because we hinted at this a little earlier. So was it obviously, you know, Franklin, Texas barbecue really inspired you, but so how much difference is there between the various various versions of barbecue at this stage? Because I think when we think a lot of regional barbecues, we think, you know, sauce, you know, Alabama's the white sauce, but is there a difference between Texas barbecue and other regional barbecues at the pure smoking level?
Not necessarily at the pure smoking level. I think it's just a focus. Like you said, sauce is kind of a number one. Like if you're trying to regionalize what makes it different, from region to region, sauce is kind of number one. And then to some extent, also cuts. Like brisket is just the king in Texas in my personal opinion. And I don't think many people would argue with this. Like nobody can really come close to a Texas style brisket.
No one talks about Kansas City style brisket.
Right. Right. You'll get Kansas City burnt ends, but they're just essentially taking a brisket and cubing it up and giving you the best parts of it. And it's almost kind of cheaty. As far as cooking an entire brisket and having it all come out where every slice is just decadent and delicious, Texas is king in that. And I think they get a lot of credit because the brisket is the most unpredictable and difficult cut to kind of smoke. It's the longest, it's an endurance battle, and there's just the most variables go into getting one that comes out perfectly.
And you're also dealing with, and I think this, correct me if I'm wrong here though, that hickory is a pretty common source
for
wood.
For
and
sure.
Wood smoke. And hickory is way less forgiving in terms of the amount of flavor that it imparts and into the meat.
Correct.
So, you know, a heavy hand on hickory is going to give you, you know, a very, very different effect than, you know, cherry wood or apple
Absolutely.
Wood.
Yeah. If you're using a fruit wood, and I had to do that for a few weeks when we first started because of the original wood supplier that we were using just didn't have it for a number of weeks. And it's just, if you're using a fruit wood, it's just so faint. It's almost more of a pot roast kind of flavor. It's just the hickory can just penetrate it so much better than a cherry or an apple wood, or even a white oak, if you're using a white oak around here. It's interesting, going back to Texas, their primary source of wood, it's called post oak. And it's so much different than a white oak that we have available to us up here. It's just so much sweeter and more penetrable, where ours is, again, it's really faint. So the hickory, for sure, as far as you're kind of beholden to whatever wood source you have regionally, you're not going to get wood sent in from across the country, because that's just not feasible.
Yeah, that's not. Well, and the point of Texas barbecue isn't let's import some stuff from, you know, I don't know.
Right.
Arkansas or I mean you are using kind of what's there,
yes.
And so to bring Texas barbecue to Wisconsin, I think you're probably truest to it if you stick around, you know, with
correct
with what's like available.
Yes.
What's available here.
You're using the cuts that, in theory, nobody wanted, even though now brisket's more expensive. But originally, yeah, the cuts that nobody wanted and just wood that was readily available and bountiful and laying around on the ground. And,
And obviously, so that's part of what makes up Texas style barbecue. As far as like kind of how is, are there any other components that you feel are integral to kind of, you know, the style? I mean,
so I think part of it too is there's, so if we're sticking with like the Texas theme, the, not just brisket, but like it's one, it's beef heavy. So going back again to when we were talking about regional, Memphis is kind of a little bit known more for pork, like ribs specifically and pulled pork. Carolina is like a whole hog, where typically if you're talking about Carolina barbecue, they're cooking a whole hog with like a vinegar sauce. And then Kansas City, you got, you know, a little bit of everything, some pulled pork, some ribs, some burnt ends, but mostly like that heavier kind of ketchupy sweet sauce is kind of what Kansas City is known for. Texas is like more beef oriented, heavy pepper rub. And also like if they have something called the Texas Trinity, where it's like any barbecue restaurant worth its salt essentially will have each of these three things will be well done. And it's brisket, pork ribs, and house-made sausage. So that's kind of what like traditional Texas barbecue joints hang their hat on. And then this day and age, though, with the, how many great barbecue restaurants there are, people are definitely having to get creative to get, you know, people to set themselves apart and get people to come to their restaurants. So you'll see all sorts of different things like pastrami, beef ribs, barbacoa in an avocado, called like a barbacado, all kinds of like really fun, fun, delicious things. But at the heart of what Texas is, it's low and slow on an offset smoker, heavy pepper rub, and, you know, utilizing all parts of the brisket, essentially, making your sausage. That's kind of, to summarize it in short, I guess, that's where it would be.
Yeah. Well, and I would say that by and large, I mean, we kind of default to two styles here in Milwaukee. I think we do something that's akin to more of a Kansas City style barbecue.
Very Kansas City.
And then we have quite a bit of Texas influence.
Yep.
You know, because a lot of the places that have actually done very well, including like Heaven's Table and Iron Grate, all have sort of a whiff of a background in that Texas piece. Yep. Definitely Heaven's Table. I mean, he's done the beef ribs and the pastrami and those kinds of things. So I think that's something that people here are more familiar with. But it also means that people know a little bit more about, you know, they've been eating a little bit more of it as folks come along, and they know a little bit more about it. So it's kind of interesting. I think it's interesting what people have chosen to bring here.
For sure.
You know,
and I love the, you know, like it's so fun because you want to take it and you want to take like the best parts or the best, I guess, not theories, that's not the right word, but the best processes, I guess. Yeah. But then also, how do you make it unique to Wisconsin or unique to this region? And it's, you know, I love when Aaron first started doing this thing at Iron Grate, he's like, well, I'm going to do something called the Milwaukee rib, which I still don't really see anywhere else, you know? And it's a really cool idea, essentially leaving like the pork belly intact on a bone and rib. And like just anything that we can do to kind of be like, okay, yes, we may be borrowing techniques and processes from elsewhere, but we're also trying to do things that are very specific to Milwaukee and Wisconsin. Just this last weekend we did beer brats, which you're, you know, going back to what we were talking about earlier, very near and dear to a lot of people's hearts in Milwaukee and Wisconsin when they think about barbecue or grilling. And working with the guys at Enlightened, it's super cool because They always have a ton of great beer on tap that we can take, boil the brats in, you know. And then at like smoke them to finish them off. So they're just a little bit unique and different. People seem to really like them. So,
I do think that's the awesome thing about barbecue now. I think we're getting to a point too where we're kind of seeing like, because barbecue doesn't just, you know, we want to say, oh, American barbecue is an American thing. And it's not really even that. Like people across the globe, you know, there are forms of barbecue and cuts of meat, you know.
Of course. Yeah.
That have been smoked or, you know, cooked over live fire for ages and ages. And I like, I guess, how I see the definition of barbecue broadening, you know.
Yeah.
And opening up, because I think there's a lot of folks who have been doing this way longer than anybody in America,
sure.
You know, who deserve credit. You know, I mean, I think we've seen, you know, like, I mean, Lao barbecue, you know, kind of coming through the States and everybody's form, everybody's got a barbecue, I feel like, and everybody's barbecue is different. And that entitles, you know, because some people are like, oh, no, there's only one kind of good barbecue.
Yeah, it's like chili. Okay, you know, can people have get a real favorite, territorial
but
about chili.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically just soup.
Yeah. But I think it's also healthy, like, right? It allows, and it gives people a lot of room to evolve and develop their own style because you got a lot of examples
for sure
to work with.
Like, it's funny that like I almost barbecue kind of makes me, it reminds me of like sports teams. Like everybody is so passionate and protective of their region's barbecue, but multiple regions can be good. Like multiple teams can be good, but you're insistent that mine is the best and yours is somewhere below that.
Yeah.
it's funny.
And I feel like a lot of times it's friendly competition.
For sure.
I mean, I think even among the folks who are doing barbecue here, like people are pretty friendly. I don't know what your experience has been.
Getting
to know other people who do, you know, similar things. I know a lot of people here have learned from a lot of other people here and
for
beyond.
Sure.
Feels a little bit like the old custard deal in Milwaukee, where it's like the custard family tree is all of the custard icons.
Custard coffee is a lot like that, you know, and it's kind of like one of those things like, okay, there's room for all of us here. So
absolutely.
Yeah. And we're not all going to be exactly the same or as good at everything. You know, we're not going to approach everything the same. It's just not going to happen. So,
yeah. I mean, if what you do is good, like that's ultimately all that matters. Like, especially not to beat a dead horse here, but if you go to Texas, like you can have barbecue restaurants literally on like every corner in a town that have a line out the door, and it like they all do perfectly well for themselves because they all make great food. It's not like one stands above all the rest and everybody else has got some sort of animosity or anything like that. I think it's the same thing. Like if you just are focused on putting out the best product you can and making it unique to whatever your vision is, like there's certainly room for everybody and then some. As long as you're putting out a good product.
Yeah. So you guys are a pop-up right now.
Correct.
And you're serving primarily at Enlightened Brewing Company on weekends.
Correct.
But you've also shown up a few other places. You've been at Ray's Wine and Spirits.
Yeah, we do Ray's maybe like once or twice a month. We just
love Ray's.
Love Ray's. They kindly had us for their barbecue event in August, which was really fun. A great experience. We were just at Central Waters and we've done some catering and a wedding, and we're still pretty green. You know, we just started in April. And, sorry, my dog is grumbling on my lap right now. If you can hear
okay. that. It, normally it's me with the grumbling dog.
I was just going to chalk that up to a stomach.
But we are certainly popping up more and more around town.
Yeah.
Well, it's really actually our first ever event.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yep.
that's awesome. Yeah, I love it. Go Rays. Keep doing great things, Rays. I'm going to call those events Sweet Baby Rays events. Barbecue and Rays. But it is nice to see kind of, it feels like for the longest time, Milwaukee had a barbecue-shaped hole in its food culture.
Absolutely.
And it's really nice that, you know, people like you and over the past maybe 5 years now, people have really like been like, no, we can fix this. Like, we can make sure that this city has really great smoked meats. Yeah. And it is kind of that, you know, that like Lori was saying, like the rising tide raises old boats. Like, I think everyone realizes that everyone likes good barbecue, so everyone can coexist. And it's nice that, you know, I just really appreciate that you guys exist.
Thank you so much.
It's been really great too, having a lot of our customers come up to us and talk about their personal barbecue experiences. And some of them will share like, I want to do this too. Like, how do we do this? Or, you know, they'll just congratulate us on just making this leap from our day jobs, which were in the finance and teaching world, and you know, trying something new. So it really is a great way to bring community together. We've gotten to meet a lot of wonderful people who love barbecue.
Well, you partner with some good people at Enlightened. I mean, both Enlightened and Rays, but the folks
and Central Waters. We like you too, Central Waters.
And Central Waters, we like you too. Exactly. The beer world. Yeah, I can almost like across the board. Most beer folks are kind of like barbecue folks. Like, you know, they're good people. But let's talk about what else. We talked a lot about brisket. Because that's obviously, you know, the bulk. But you guys do a number of other predictable barbecue type things, as well as like kind of some offshoots with your meats. So maybe talk about what your repertoire involves. And then, Cindy, I do want to talk about sides, because I know, like, you're the queen of the sides.
That is a whole other battlefield.
And I want to say, before it forgets to be said, that I often say, like, I think that's just as important, you know, as
I agree.
As the meat.
And it's, you know, just as like, tempestuous. Absolutely. They're people very defensive about how they want their barbecue.
How they want their baked beans, how they want their coleslaw. Yes, and I get that. Yeah, it's just like chili. It's just like a chili situation. But
like chicken soup. I think it's a lot of, you know, what you grew up with and what you have that taste memory for, that people are like, no, wrong. It needs to be like this. It's like, but what if it was also good like this?
And I find that when I'm talking with people, because I do really enjoy the front of house experience, and I try to be at the register so I can answer questions and really make connections with our guests. It's nice to explain to people, because they'll ask often if I don't have a very detailed description about the potato salad or the coleslaw. They want to know, you know, is it vinegar based? Is it mayo based? Is there mustard in it? Do I put pickles in it? All of the things that they grew up enjoying and loving about that side dish that was on their, you know, grandmother's or aunt's or mother's table. And I try to let people know, bless you, I try to let people know that a lot of these recipes are the ones that my mom makes, or, you know, I grew up eating at family parties, or I'll take a version of that and add a twist to it. So it's been a really fun experience making the sides that I enjoy. I want to like them, and I want them to complement the meat. I enjoy like the traditional mac and cheese, baked beans, but I also like really love a refreshing, tangy side to balance out that really heavy, you know, silky meat that I just think sometimes you need a break from all the heavy.
Just the other day I had a really great vinegar slaw here in North Carolina, and I was just like, it's so nice to go from like, you know, fatty brisket to like that crisp, you know, just like it keeps you eating, it wakes you up.
And that acid totally cuts the fat, so that you're able to taste again after all of the meat fat coats your tongue.
Like a barbecue palate cleanser.
Yeah,
it is. Exactly. It is like a barbecue palate cleanser, but it's
also delicious.
But also delicious. Like if a palate cleanser had outstanding flavor on its own. Was there? Was there like one in particular, like you brought up the baked beans right off the bat. Was there like a particular side that you were like, this is my project to end all that?
Gosh, I don't think that there's one in particular. I felt like the potato salad that I make for Sweet Smoke is the one I've been making for my family. And it's a version of my mom's potato salad mixed with some extra things that I like in it. So that one I wanted to get right for the restaurant.
So now you have to tell it. Now you have to tell us about it.
Oh, sure. So it is a mayonnaise and mayo-based potato salad. I put pickle juice and chopped pickles in it. I put fresh dill in there. I like diced carrots for a little crunch because I don't know. When I'm eating the potato salad, I just need that bite. And again, pairing that with barbecue, you're getting a lot of the same textures. So I like to make sure that we have things that have some crunch, some bite to them. And what else? Oh, and and then eggs and some very finely chopped celery, onion. So nothing wild, but I just think it's a really nice balanced potato salad. My favorite side though, is it's very simple. It's just thinly sliced cucumbers in sour cream with chives and then a little salt and pepper. And people are often like, what is that? It's just sour cream and cucumbers. And it just, it's something we grew up with. My mom would, grab some cucumbers in the garden. She'd tell us to go out and cut some chives. And that would be our quick side for dinner. But it goes so well with meats. It's just, I don't know.
Well, you also have the people who grew up eating it in Wisconsin who are very happy to see it.
Yes,
it is a kind of fun way of Wisconsinizing the barbecue and being like, all right, this is a little bit of Scotty flavor to this kind
and
of.
And I think it's a perfect side. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And your slaw got the thumbs up from my husband, who is a huge fan of coleslaw. And kind of all kinds, as long as it's done well, and it's fresh and crispy and not super. I think you lose his interest when it's like really overdressed and soupy, right?
Yeah.
Or just not crisp and bright.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys got good.
Thank
you.
Yeah.
The big project, I don't want to speak for you, but the big project you kind of have going now is trying to get house-made potato bread to replace, because we're just throwing slices of, store-bought white bread on with our platters and not, especially because I think a lot of people around here just don't know why we're giving you slices of white bread next to this meat.
Because that comes at the bottom of the, it's
just, a lot of it's coming back or getting tossed away.
The Texas toast is what it would often be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cindy's taken that up as a project. She's like, well, we've seen too much of this coming back in the garbage. I think maybe if I, it'll just be better if I can bake some really nice potato bread to go out there, but also maybe people actually start, putting the meat and the pickles and the onions and the sauce in there and doing a fold over and eating it as opposed to just sending it back to the garbage.
Kind of seeing a
we love the sandwiches we make, but in my opinion, doing that fold over where you have some meat on one slice of bread and then you can garnish it is just like a better meat bread ratio for your brisket and pork. So I would love to see more people use the bread that way. And to be quite honest, I am not a baker. My mother, my sister, they're fantastic chefs and bakers. Everything I'm learning, they're my resources, truly. I go to them with a million questions and they're so supportive and wonderful and talented. So I'm very lucky to have them behind me as a team. And we're also hoping that my mom will join us in the next couple years here, and maybe I won't have to worry about the bread breaking and the cookie baking.
So. Yeah, we're trying to recruit her when she's done with her day job here, which is close, hopefully.
Yeah.
This is public peer pressure right here. You want on a
podcast? Sandy, come on, Sandy.
Nudge, nudge, to join the team.
Mom, help!
The extended family business is in effect here. Yeah. Yeah.
As far as like things that were like kind of the off, like, I don't know forget how you worded it, but like the more unique items, I guess. We actually this weekend which I don't know when you guys put the podcast out, but this weekend, which is November 11th, 12th, we're going to have brisket pastrami for the first time, which I'm really excited about. I love pastrami personally. Like it's, whether it's deli cut, like cold cuts, or whether it's like in brisket form, I love all things pastrami. so yeah, we'll for the first time, we'll have brisket pastrami. We'll be serving it on a rye with like a house-made mustard sauce. Really excited about that one.
Like we've a Carolina Gold mustard sauce or
something in that vicinity. It's not going to, it's not quite as, I guess, liquidy or vinegary as like a Carolina mustard sauce. It'll be a little thicker, but in that ballpark, not sweet, but, and then, we've done roasted or smoked lamb kind of barbacoa. So smoked lamb leg on naan bread, with some tzatziki, some Kalamata olives, some mint leaves.
You've maybe done like a bao bun?
Yes.
Have I seen this? Okay. One. We recently, Adam has his pork belly burnt ends and he does them in this really tasty gochujang sauce. And we, again, this is a family recipe. Once Adam brought this to a family gathering and we were like, what can we do with this? So we've been making this for 5 years, maybe, I would say.
Yeah, before COVID, for sure.
Yeah, we'll make a steam bun, and then we have got the radishes and cilantro and pickled carrots, and it's just a really tasty little bite. So that was something we did recently that's kind of unique, and I don't know, it's also fun for us. We, like, I do get bored making the same sides, and we like to make sure we're consistent in our meats and our sides, but we also like want to keep it fun and keep it interesting for us. And I think that keeps it interesting for anyone who comes out to try it.
It's like a musician remixing their set list every so often. You know, you gotta keep the muscles interested and gotta keep yourself entertained.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And you guys have done some other meats, like you've done some pulled pork.
Yeah, we'll have pulled pork. Like, so the staples that we always have on Saturday, we have pulled pork, we have pork ribs. Even though turkey is very expensive right now, I'm sucking it up and we're having turkey still. And brisket, and then usually one, like, rotating house-made sausage. So it's typically one of, like, 5, 6, 7 different sausages that I kind of keep cycling through.
But and you work with a local company to make your sausage custom?
I make those.
Or you're making? Oh, yeah. you actually do? Okay.
I am making the sausages. So yeah, I think this week we'll have jalapeno cheddars.
That's again, what I requested.
I believe. Yeah.
You requested correctly. That is
amazing. Thank you. I know.
Well, and also we should talk about the burger as well, because Lori, one of her highest reviewed burgers on her Burger Trail series, if I may say, a wild 49 out of 50. And anyone who knows Lori knows that she does not hand out points. You do not hand out those points generally.
No, but it's been easy. I mean, I think the burger game in Milwaukee since, because I started the Burger Trail in 2017 and like 180 burgers in. Which sounds like shameful, right?
Lori is more beef than man actually, at this point.
If you calculate that, I took a bunch of weeks off, right? Like, so this series started and I did it once a week and I did slow down and I didn't do it for about almost a year in there because I just was like, I'm kind of out of burgers. I'm kind of out of burgers that I know will
low
be good,
and behold,
you know,
a barbecue pop-up.
And so I laid low for about a year and I brought it back because I'm like, okay, there's enough burgers that I have a suspicion. One or two I'd had. And I was like, these need to go on a list somewhere. Our burger game is definitely stronger. But yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I don't just throw out points.
Yeah.
49 out of 50 so is pretty tough.
So proud. Like, we've had friends tell us, like, because I, for the burger, it was one of those things where, again, we always had a brisket, chopped brisket scraps laying around because I was making them like every other weekend with no plans to like have people over to our house or anything. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, hey, Cindy, here's, you know, 10 pounds of meat. Have fun. And I was like, God, I wonder if anybody's ever just taken chopped brisket and mixed it with ground beef and tried to do a smash burger that way. And I started poking around, and I just kept finding, you know, if you're Googling or checking YouTube for brisket smash burger, it's like the using raw brisket, which a lot of people, you know, have started doing now as their right. brisket grind or as their burger grind. But I couldn't really find anything where you just mix it together. So I was like, well, I'm going to see what happens. And if it crumbles and falls apart or doesn't work, whatever, but you know, and it held up and it was good. And then yeah, lots of friends who I would make them for, and they say, oh, this burger is so great. It's the best thing I've ever had. And it's like, well, you're always going to get like gassed up by your friends. So I didn't think too much of it. You know, that's a low bar to clear. But yeah, this like reading Lori's write-up was so nice, and it made us feel like really, really good, I will say. Especially at a time where it's like, it's tough, you know, you have weekends where it's not always as busy as you're hoping it's going to be, especially when you're first starting out. Just so to see stuff like that and to see people appreciate what you're doing, it feels really good.
And now I apologize because you probably have people coming for burgers on Friday.
No, it's great.
Saturdays.
I love it.
No, I'm sorry.
Sorry, we're out of those.
Lori, how could you have done this to them?
Well, you know, I mean,
there are stories like
hopefully
that.
They will settle for some other form of meat, you know.
Because there are stories out there of like the New York Times said that this small town, you know, diner had the best burger they ever had. And then the diner's like, we cannot support the amount.
I read an article about that where I can't remember who the guy worked for. He was either like an Eater or a Thrillist or some writer wrote like I feel so bad. I wrote this thing saying this is the best burger in America and basically ruined this guy's life. But obviously there's other issues.
Yeah, I think I know what story you're talking about, because didn't the person end up having like tax fraud or something like
that?
Yeah,
there were fortunately
the IRS showed
involved.
Up and they were like, yes, you have a great burger. And also we need to go through your files.
So like, I don't know. I mean, I get where he was coming from. Like, oh, I just dumped all this business on this person. But yeah, there were other things at play there. But we'll gladly take that volume of business and we'll figure out a way to deal with it.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, so what kind of do you see? You guys have built a really great reputation. You're getting write-ups all over the city. What do you kind of see for the future of this? Do you like the pop-up kind of vibe? Or are you seeing growing that out more?
And this is maybe unfair. I mean, you've been around for, you know, a total of 6 months. and you've already gone through one, because you guys were at Common Cookhouse, were you?
We were
initially. Yep. You had your commercial kitchen burned down. I don't want to sit and focus on the negative here either. But that's definitely not a good surprise to have happen to you, you know, shortly after starting out, especially when commercial kitchens are hard to find. But you guys seem to have gotten resituated in a new kitchen, I'm presuming.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because I think they're not quite up and running, which is good. So when you start out, you're just like, should we see how this goes? Okay, let's see if we can make this go, and then we'll do a food truck, or we'll do a restaurant, or, you know, I don't know. We'll, you know, tag ourselves onto a brewery somewhere. What was your idea?
I think we're realists in that we've never ran a restaurant before. I mean, I was a server throughout most of my life. So I have restaurant experience, but that's not the same. And Adam has the business experience that he mentioned earlier, but we don't want to bite off more than we can chew. Yes, that's right. And you worked at Frosty's in college too. That's
good. That discount my burger.
You've got restaurant experience. That's right.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. I think it's good for everybody to have some sort of restaurant experience.
It is.
From the perspective of, you know,
So you know, it's hard work. Into it.
Yeah.
Like, because sometimes it's glamorized. I think if you haven't worked in a kitchen or around a kitchen, you're like, oh, it's so glamorous. And it's like,
you're going to be famous in 2 seconds. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. Sorry, Sydney.
It's just that we do want to kind of learn, grow a little bit. We're cautious about taking on more than we can. It would be so cool if we could move into a brick and mortar, you know, in a couple of months. But at the same time, I don't think that we have the ability right now to keep up with that. And we want to, or first and foremost, we want to maintain the quality of the product that we're putting out. And it is a very craft. We have to keep things kind of small and keep our hour, or like keep our days of the week that we're open to a minimum in order to maintain that quality. So we've talked a little bit about looking for a trailer for maybe the upcoming year. And then I think long-term goals, we'd love to have, I keep saying, a small brick and mortar. Like, I'd love to have this very small place with a small dining room. Yeah. I don't know. Adam, do you want to, do you have anything to cover our goals? I don't know.
Yeah. I think I would, like, if you're asking me, and maybe I'm pushing Cindy a little bit on this, but yeah, I would love to, I would love to have, a trailer going into spring, just something to make us a little bit more mobile to take advantage of like additional opportunities or get out there and just do things that we might not be able to do now where we're dragging all of our stuff in our in our two cars and our truck and our Outback across town. So if I were to guess, I would think we'll probably look to getting a trailer this year and then see how that goes for a while, go through at least one like food truck season. And try to just bust our butts and take as many opportunities as we can possibly handle. Kind of like what Cindy was saying, like there, we have no other, I mean, we have no other employees really at all, but we certainly have no other, nobody else to work the pits. Mm-hmm. And since I'm such a control freak, like that would be an entire process to find somebody else to, you know, even be able to take that on for portions of the day. Because I'm just not prepared to do like 3-4 16-hour days in addition to all the other prep work that we have to do. So yeah, it's, we're kind of, I like where we're at now where we have, you know, one night we'll do tacos where it's just like, we can be a little creative. It's things that don't necessarily need to be smoked for a full 12, 14, 16 hours. But still like a interesting selection of smoked meats. Like we have a smoked fish taco, smoked tilapia, a smoked chicken thigh. We'll do a barbacoa. Just some things that, yeah, don't take as long. Saturday, it's like, it's fun because we can do our entire like big Texas style smoked meat platter day. And then Sundays we do our burgers. And then we try to fill in Wednesdays with just whatever opportunities we have. Typically at Ray's, like Cindy mentioned, Central Waters. We might have some other things coming up here through the end of the year. But I think once winter wraps up, it'll be, we'll probably be looking to find something that gets us the ability to get out there a little bit more. And then we'll see how that goes. And yeah, hopefully someday we'll find our own spot. But we're not in any huge rush.
Obviously, you know, you're early on and this isn't like, you know, you don't have to make any promises to anybody. but 10 times when you start something like this, you have like at least like a little start of a dream, like what you would love to do in your head.
I think we've,
and some people are really practical about it and some people are just kind of wild and free and whatever happens.
Are certainly not thinking we're going to be in some like 5,000 square foot location downtown Milwaukee within the next year or two.
But this is barbecue. So, you know, you don't even need, you know, you don't even need that. I mean, most barbecue places, like, I mean, barbecue is allowed to sell out. I mean, that's phenomenal, right?
Well, and like the barbecue is the kind of thing where like, honestly, like the cheaper the venue, like the shoddier the venue, the better it is. Like,
I'm with you 100%.
Like a classy barbecue place should not exist.
For you guys, you know?
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Like, that's if you guys just bunker up a trailer in a park, that's perfect. No. Like that's exactly what barbecue should
be. No, actually an old, a brewery in an old warehouse district.
Yeah.
It's probably perfect.
Yeah.
The atmosphere there is just wonderful. It's been such a great fit and it's been very symbiotic. And Lighten's beer goes so well with our food. I love this space though. I mean, just this last weekend we had that terrible rainstorm that came through. It was beautiful in their tap room and we are really enjoying popping up there.
Okay, so yeah. All this talk of delicious smoked meats and sides and beers, I gotta go eat dinner now. So, but before we go, well, you have to ask the most important question of all these podcasts, which is, where can people find you guys, both in person and on them interwebs, if they want to find out more?
Because you post your menus regularly.
You post a lot of food porn on the internet.
Yeah.
A lot of tasty smoked meats.
And if people want to go on the right days to get the right things, you know, where do they look for you?
Am I going, Cindy?
Oh, yeah. <It's quiet. laughs> Crickets. Yeah, you go. You tell.
So, yeah, I mean, I think Wednesday, typically on Fridays, we're at Enlightened. We do our taco night. So it's a selection of 5 to 6 tacos on homemade flour tortillas. So that's pretty much every Friday, 5 to 7, unless otherwise noted. Saturday is also at Enlightened. We typically run 12 to 6, and that's our, you know, full plate barbecue service, brisket, pork, pulled pork, ribs, turkey, sausage, special sides, the whole nine yards. And then Sunday is our burger day, also at Enlightened. So 12 to 4, we're smashing up burgers. And then sporadically, look for us on random Wednesdays popping up in other places, but usually we don't know until a week or two before.
And what's your social handle? So
social
folks can actually follow you.
Sweet Smoke BBQ MKE. So at Sweet Smoke BBQ MKE.
Yeah. And I think you're pretty consistent with that, both on Facebook and Instagram.
Yes.
Yep,
but I would say your Instagram is maybe more active.
We only recently jumped on Facebook. I figured it out. I Googled it and I figured out how to do it. So now we're on.
There we go. So I would say, I had just Sweet Smoke Barbecue MKE on Instagram for sure. And to keep up because, you know, you guys have the right to change things up anytime you want. And,
and we will.
That includes
and do.
Your menus.
Thank you so much for joining us and for utterly, I mean, you're devastating my night because I'm just going to eat so much food now because this is really made me impossibly hungry. But thank you so much for the conversation. We can't wait to see what you all do and smoke next. Yeah.
Thank you both so much. Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Call the podcast. What an awesome conversation. Very, very hunger-inducing, which is good, because currently being in the South, I am surrounded by delicious food. So, not that there's not delicious food in Wisconsin, of course, that's not what I'm saying.
No, there's plenty of delicious
But we're talking
food
barbecue, here, but... and now I'm surrounded in by barbecue. I know we've been talking Texas style this whole time, but I'm going to have to get me some of that South Carolina style while I'm here.
Which is good in its own right.
It's all good. I mean, who could ever complain about fire roasting meat and then a delicious sauce of some sort of base? I believe South Carolina...
Or no sauce, depending on where you're.
Or no sauce, because if it's that good. I believe South Carolina... I think we had this conversation earlier, but I believe it is a tomato-based sauce, the South Carolina style.
Yeah, one of the Carolinas is the Carolina Gold.
Yes, the mustard base, which is very good. I had some of that the other day, and it was outstanding. But enough talking sauces. Let's talk about the most important part of a barbecue, which is the smoke, which leads us to our food porn for today's episode. Today's episode, our piece is by Ophelia Zepeda. I hope I pronounced that right. And the piece is called Smoke in Our Hair. Ooh, boy. So I'm seeing already a lot of words that I'm not sure if I can pronounce, so this may be a very embarrassing food porn reading, but we'll see how it goes. Lori?
Be fine. There's only one. There's only one in like the fourth sentence.
What's this word? Germany? I'm confused by that one. Oh. Anyways.
You're a dork.
I am a cool guy.
Anyway.
This is Smoke in Our Hair by Ophelia Zepeda. The scent of burning wood holds the strongest memory. Mesquite, cedar, pinyon, juniper, all are distinct. Mesquite is dry desert air and mild winter. Cedar and pinyon are colder places. Winter air in our hair is pulled away and scent of smoke settles in its place. We walk around the rest of the day with the aroma resting on our shoulders. The sweet smell holds the strongest memory. We stand around the fire. The sound of the crackle of wood and spark is ephemeral. Smoke, like memories, permeates our hair, our clothing, our layers of skin. The smoke travels deep to the seat of memory. We walk away from the fire. No matter how far we walk, we carry this scent with us. New York City, France, Germany, we catch the scent of burning wood. We are brought home. I liked that piece.
I thought that good was nice.
Piece. And for a piece that's not really about barbecue. Food. Yeah, it's not about food, no. Basically.
but I feel like that smell and that smell of barbecue, like if you're in the barbecue realm or if you've eaten barbecue, mm-hmm. especially from a place that's, you know, that's serving it up, like that smell gets under your skin in a very, very similar way.
I interviewed a restaurant owner who does a lot of barbecue, who does a lot of smoking and things like that. And he got COVID during the pandemic, and he hadn't gotten his scent of smell back. And he said it really, really hurt because, you know, the scent of, you know, barbecue chicken is half of the enjoyment of it. You know, it's that so much of that sense memory and so much of that flavor comes from that smoking smell, and to miss out on that, it's a massive bummer. Hopefully he's gotten most of those sensors back, I haven't checked in on him since then, so hopefully he's doing well, and hopefully you're all doing well, and hopefully you're all finding us on the internet. Lori, where can people find us, the Food Crush Podcast, on the internet?
You can find us at Food Crush Pod, and that's good on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
And where can people find you on all of those apps?
And people can find me at Lo Frederick on all of those same apps. Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. How about you, Matt?
You can find me on Facebook at Matt Miller. You can find me on the slowly melting away into nothingness Twitter at A Man About Film, which is where you can also find me on the less melting into madness Instagram at A Man About Film. Thank you to all who listen to this podcast. Thank you all you view. Thank you to our wonderful guest. Thank you to Lori. Thank you to our producer, Gabe. And one more time, thank y'all for listening to this podcast. Oh, no, I said y'all. No. The South Carolina is getting into my bones.
It's going to happen to me, too. All right.
Be well, everyone. And as always, keep cooking.